So, something you guys are probably going to learn about me if you ever come into my office. One thing I love to listen to is motivational speeches. I can't get enough of them. And when I'm at the gym and I'm working out, that's what I listen to. Because there's nothing like pushing past that last rep with some jacked guy yelling at you, telling you can do better. It's a real thing. So I put them on, and I'm going to move this because I put them on, and as I was writing this sermon, I was listening to one. It was about forgetting the past and moving forward, embracing your future, your destiny. And I loved it because it traced back to my past, and it really reminded me of the story that I picked out to talk about with you guys, which was the story of Moses. And it just spoke out to me, and in it, the guy just kept asking the same question over and over again. Are you willing to forget your past and embrace the potential that you have? To reach for the future, to continue on, to move past whatever has caused you to fear, to have pain, to push through that and go further than you ever have before. And I'm excited to go through this story with you because it really illustrates what happens when we don't do that. When we don't push past our fears. When we don't push past the past pain in our lives. It shows us what we miss out on. Before I go further, I'm going to open up in prayer. If you could bow your heads with me. Lord, I ask that you bless this congregation with open hearts as we look to your word for direction in our lives. I pray that my voice would go quiet and still while yours would rise and be heard throughout this place. That the only words I speak would be by your Spirit, God, and not by my own will, but by yours. In your name, amen. I bring up the speech because forgetting the past, about forgetting your past, because I believe our fears can all be traced back to a single moment in our history. For instance, another thing you're going to learn about me, I don't always make great decisions. The next story I'm going to tell you is one of those times. I grew up on a farm, sometimes. And on this farm, we would get these giant round hay bales. If you drive by any fields, you've seen them, giant marshmallows. So when we got them, we'd stack them up on this big flatbed trailer. And they'd be roughly 13, 15 feet high. And then we'd park them where we put all our other hay, and there was a buildup of hay, and you could jump off them. And I had seen my brother and my sister do it, and it looked easy. Keep in mind, I was about yay high. And I climbed up there, and I got really excited, and I'm looking down. I'm like, this is great. I'm going to fly right now. And so I did this weird star jump off the top of the hay bales, and I just presented myself. And as I came down, I hit what was underneath the hay, a stack of pallets, and I broke two bones in my leg. I will always, from now on, check my landings. That pain that shot through my body is now a reference point for me every time I stand up over something high, getting ready to jump off. Do I know what's under there? And it created this healthy fear of heights for me. You know, I'm not petrified of them, but I always make sure I check what's underneath me if I have to jump down. Or that I have a way down without doing so. The question I want to ask you guys is, what happens when we have unhealthy fears instilled in our lives? When some past pain instills something that's unhealthy in us, a fear of living up to what we know we can, that fear of failure, rejection, the fears of going through mental or physical pain again that aren't necessarily a bad thing that we just have to push through? What happens when we allow it to become unhealthy? It begins to hold us back. It begins to negate our potential. It stops us from trying our best. We no longer want to fail, because that sucks, and that is painful when people see you fall. And so we stop trying our best because it's an easy excuse to say, well, yeah, I failed, but I didn't try my hardest either, so it's not a big deal. That's easier to say than, I gave everything I had. I put everything I have on the line, and I fell short. Because that hurts. It's easier to put on masks for people and be someone you're not, because then they're not really rejecting you. They're rejecting this version of you that you put out there. We start coming up with ways to protect ourselves from these fears, and we live in the past. Now, in that speech, I love what he said. I don't have the accent he does, so I'm going to butcher this, but he says, you got to determine whether you're going to flounder around in your history or embrace your destiny, and only you can decide. When we start to just stay in those past fears, we reject our destiny. We reject the fullness that God has for our lives. Because we want to be protected. And we're living in a past pain. There are many culprits of past pain that instill these unhealthy fears and that stop us. I won't list them all, but I've already said a few. Failure, rejection, judgment. These fears haunt us in our darkest moments. All the ones that I've talked about, these feelings of hiding something, hiding who you are, something you've done. It resounds within each one of us because we've all lived a full life. At some point in time, we've experienced these past pains. And they come in unique ways, different to each of our own circumstances. And the circumstance that our character went through is something we're all going to be able to relate to. So we're looking at the story of Moses. It's going to be in Exodus. First verses are chapter 2, 11 to 14. I'm not going to be quite there yet, but you guys can start. So a lot of you know the story of Moses, I'm sure. He turns into this great leader. God calls him out to deliver the Israelites. And he steps up. They're all enslaved to Egypt, and he brings them out. And this is how we think of Moses. A lot of the times, he's this great leader in our minds, chosen by God to do something amazing. And he fulfills that. But what we oftentimes forget is that Moses started off as a small man, racked with fear that his past would repeat itself. And that he didn't become that great leader we all know until he pushed past it. The other thing we don't always recognize is that Moses missed out because of his fear. He missed out on a part of the blessing God had for him in his calling. So I'll give you the backstory of Moses for those of you who don't know. Moses was born in tragedy. He was born in Egypt, and I say tragedy because at this time the Israelites were enslaved to the Egyptians. They were serving them for hundreds of years. And Moses was born at a time where Pharaoh had become terrified because the Hebrews were living up to their commandment of being fruitful and multiplying. And they were doing so greatly. So Pharaoh became afraid because he saw this as a threat. He said he thought that the tables were going to turn and the Hebrews were going to rise up and by sheer number take the kingdom And then the Egyptians would be the ones serving the Hebrews. So he came up with this plan in his mind, and he said, I got it. We'll just wipe out an entire generation of them. We'll have them all throw their newborn babies into the River Nile. That's going to stop them for a little while. So this is when Moses was born. He was destined to die. Now his mother, being a rebel, a woman after my own heart, said, not a chance. So she took her newborn baby Moses, she put him in a basket, and she took him to the Nile River and set him in there, and he just floated in the reeds. And then she left, and she trusted God to take care of her child. I don't know if you guys have ever seen pictures of the River Nile and what it's full of. It's not a good place to raise a child, so she leaves it there and she says, God, you're going to take care of my kid, and I trust you. I have that faith. And God did. He took care of Moses, and he set it up so that Pharaoh's daughter was actually walking down the way, and she probably heard Moses cry, and she went over to the basket. She opened it up. She looked in, and she saw this beautiful baby. And she was like, oh, it's so cute. And she did what any young daughter would do when they find something they think is adorable. Pick it up, and she carried him and rocked him. And she went to her dad, and with big puppy dog eyes, every father knows the ones, can I keep it? Not seeing any threat by it, Pharaoh said yes. This set Moses on a track to become the great leader he did. We know from Acts 7:22 that it says Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was powerful in words and in action. It's because he was put in the schools that the Egyptian princes would have been put into. He learned how to give speeches, battle tactics, science, everything. He was trained to be a great leader. We serve a God who is ironic, or as a, he has a humor, because he put Moses to be raised up by Pharaoh, who wanted to stop exactly what Moses is going to do. Not only did Pharaoh kill an entire generation of Israelites for this, he then raised up Moses, who's going to deliver the Israelites from Egypt. I find it hilarious. You got to think God's just sitting up there laughing. That's right, you kill my people. Use the one you tried to kill to deliver them. And you're going to prepare them. It's got to be the kicker when the Pharaoh finds out it's Moses causing all the trouble. This kind of brings us to Exodus 2:11, where two things happen that change Moses' life forever. So if you've turned there, we're going to start to read. Verse 11. One day after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Looking this way and that, and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. The next day, he went out and saw two Hebrews fighting. He asked the one in the wrong, why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew? The man said, who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian? Then Moses was afraid and thought, what I did must have become known. So as a quick recap, Moses is out walking. He sees this overseer bullying one of his Hebrew brethren, and he becomes enraged. We can tell that Moses is obviously passionate about his people, because he kills the guy, and he hides him. The next thing is, he sees these two Hebrews fighting, and Moses tries to step up and resolve the situation. He tries to be a leader to these guys. He cares for them. He loves them. They're his people. And he wants to see them prosper. And so he steps in to do that. And to use his leadership skills he's been equipped with. And the guy looks at him and just says, "Who are you to tell me what to do? Who has sent you here to rule over us? Like, what authority do you have?" He completely rejects Moses after he attempts to step up. And Moses never forgets this. He never forgets these questions. That's the second part that changed his life. The first part is he killed a dude, so he had to leave Egypt. Because the guy kind of gave this veiled threat too. Like, yeah, you might be a part of the Pharaoh's court, but you killed a man and I might be inclined to tell someone about it if you try and report me for fighting or stop me. So Moses kind of freaks out and he takes off and he's like, okay, people are going to know about this. I'm going to get caught. The Pharaoh finds out. Moses runs away. He runs into the desert and he meets this priest of Midian who has 7 daughters. And this lucky guy figures this is a great place to settle down. So he picks one of the daughters, gets married, and starts a new career as a shepherd. Not bad for a guy on the run. This brings us up to where we begin to see how Moses lets his past influence his future decisions. This is chapter 3, verses 4 to 9. Moses is walking out, tending the sheep, and he starts to see this flame off in the distance, and he goes and he checks it out. It's this bush that's on fire, but isn't burning. So he walks up to it, and this is when God shows up. Verse 4. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him, and from within the bush, "Moses, Moses." And Moses said, "Here I am." "Do not come any closer," God said. "Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground." Then he said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, "I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers. I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and bring them out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." This is insane. God just commissioned Moses face to face. Moses has been given this great purpose. Some of us spend years trying to figure out what God wants us to do. And every so often still have to check. And Moses just has God show up and say, "This is what you're doing." I wish that happened. God has given Moses a gift of knowledge and is telling Moses, "I'm going to empower you to do something great." And then Moses has the audacity, has the grit to question him on it in the next few verses. But this is why, see, Moses never forgot what the Hebrew asked him. And we see that in verse 11. But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" And God said, "I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Moses said to God, "Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you.' And they ask me, 'What is his name?' Then what shall I tell them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites: 'I am has sent me to you.'" I just want to pause there for a moment and go through those questions. Who am I? Who are you? What if they don't believe me? This is 40 years later. And Moses still remembers the pain from his past. It's still controlling him because it's the first thing he thinks of when he's asked to go back to his people, which we know he cared deeply about. We know he loved the Israelites and his people, and he had compassion for them. And yet, as soon as he's told that God is going to deliver them, that God is going to use Moses and his leadership to bring them out, the first thing he thinks of is that fear that is stuck with him. That past pain that has never left. Moses is like me when I'm standing over the ledge of something. And I remember breaking my leg. And I look down and I immediately think of it. And I climb down and I check the landing. I'm sure you all have similar situations. It's the first thing you think of. But God has an answer for it, and I love it, because it clears everything up. Moses says, "Who am I?" God says, "I am with you." Because guess what? It doesn't matter who you are. Don't get offended yet. But you don't matter, and I don't matter. Because it's not about what we can do, who we are, or what's in our past. It's about who is with us. And when God says he is with you, you can guarantee he's going to take care of you. That he has a plan laid out. And that he's leading the way, and that we can rely on him in our faith. That was God's answer to Moses. Who am I? Never think you are inadequate to fulfill the call of God on your lives. Know that you are inadequate. But that God is adequate, and more so. So it doesn't matter your shortfallings. It matters who's with you. It matters that God is leading the charge. In verses 15 to 22, I'm going to paraphrase these for the sake of time. If you're following along, God continues to tell him that I'm the God of your forefathers. So assemble the elders and tell them I sent you to deliver them. Then go to Pharaoh. Tell them to let you go for 3 days to make a sacrifice for me, for I have visited you. He won't let you go unless I give a show of force and compel him through all the wonders that I will do. I will stretch out my hand, and I will strike the Egyptians with all these wonders. I will do among them, and he will let you go, and they will give you gold and jewelry, and you will plunder them. So short and sweet, God says, tell them I'm back, I showed up, I'm here to deliver them. Ask them to let you go, they're going to say no. I'm going to throw down, I'm going to do some miracles. And out of fear, they're going to let you go. And then as you go, I want you to ask them for all their gold and riches. They're going to give that to you too. Awesome. But you ever tell someone about something you're really excited about? Like you just can't believe you have. And they give you that blank stare like, cool story. No, I don't think you get it. I just bought this new car. It breaks if it sees that I'm going to hit someone. Tells me if I'm going over the line. It's got a blind spot indicator. I'm just like, nah, I don't care. My call's like a 1983 Tercel. Okay, get out of here. This is Moses, and you got to picture God in his exasperation is going through this. So excited. Moses, I'm here to deliver my people. They have been waiting for me. And on top of that, I'm choosing you to do it. Let's go. And Moses is like, hold on. Just wait. I got some questions. Chapter 4, verses 1 to 17. Moses answered, "What if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, 'The Lord did not appear to you'?" Again, it's that first question. What if they don't believe me? He has this fear that his people are going to reject him, that he's not adequate enough, and they're going to see it. God just answered this. "Moses, if they don't believe you, I'm going to give you miracles." It was like 3 verses ago, man. Keep up. But he goes on. So the Lord said to him, "What is that in your hand?" "A staff," he replied. The Lord said, "Throw it on the ground." Moses threw it on the ground and it became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, "Reach out your hand and take it by the tail." So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, and it turned back into a staff in his hand. "This," said the Lord, "is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you." You just picture Moses freaking out right now. I'm reading between the lines. It says he ran from it. This massive snake shows up. I say massive. Later on the story, it eats 2 other snakes very quickly. We know it was big. He throws a stick on the ground. Snake. And he takes off and he's gone. He freaks out, screams. "Ah!" God's sitting back at the bush. Like, "Moses. No, Moses, come here. Come back. It's just, you pick it up. It's fine. Bro, come on. Calm down. I got more to show you." Moses comes tentatively back. Picks it up. The Lord's not done with him. Decides to show him some more. Have some more fun with Moses. In verse 6, "Then the Lord said, 'Put your hand inside your cloak.' So Moses put his hand into his cloak. And when he took it out, the skin was leprous. It had become as white as snow. 'Now put it back in your cloak,' he said. So Moses put it back into his cloak, and when he took it out, it was restored like the rest of his flesh." God is definitely messing with Moses at this point. "Yeah, you don't believe me? You want to ask me a bunch of dumb questions? Throw your stick on the ground. Put your hand in your jacket." Comes up. "Ah!" It's molded. Then the Lord said, "If they do not believe you or pay attention to the first sign, they may believe the second. But if they do not believe these 2 signs or listen to you, take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground. The water you take from the river will become blood on the ground." Moses said to the Lord, "Pardon your servant. Lord, I've never been eloquent, neither in the past or since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue." The Lord said to him, "Who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I will help you speak, and I will teach you what to say." Just again, it's not about us. It's about God. I like how God gives an extra few miracles to Moses. Like, who's not going to believe when you throw a stick on the ground, it becomes a snake? You were sent by someone like God. That wasn't for the Israelites' sake. It was for Moses' sake. So when he got to have more excuses, God already had an answer. Moses' whole, "I'm not eloquent of speech. I can't talk, Lord." We know that's not true. We see that in Acts 7:22. He was powerful in speech and in action. It's recorded. Moses is at this point so terrified that his past is going to repeat itself. He's on the verge of lying to God. He doesn't care about these miracles and these crazy signs he's just been shown, because he's blinded by his fear. He is blinded by his past. He's allowed it to consume him. He no longer cares what God is going to do through him, what he's doing that is so great and awesome and powerful in front of him. He's just looking for a way out. In the next part, he takes it even further. In verse 13, it says, "But Moses said, 'Pardon your servant. Lord, please send someone else.' Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, and he said, 'What about your brother, Aaron the Levite? I know he can speak well. He is already on his way to meet you, and he will be glad to see you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak and will teach you what to do. He will speak to the people for you, and it will be as if he were your mouth and as if you were God to him. But take this staff in your hand so you can perform the signs with it." Don't miss this. God's anger burned against him. And then he sent Aaron, or told him about Aaron. That wasn't just a quick side note about God's anger burning against Moses. Moses just outright rejected God's call in his life. He said, "God sent someone else. I'm not going to do it. I can't do it." God gets angry and he says, "Fine, your brother's on his way." From that point on, the Levitical priest line was to sit with Aaron and his lineage, which otherwise would have been for Moses, which is such a great honor and blessing to go along with that calling. Because you're the mouthpiece of God to the people. But because Moses allowed his fear to consume him, he rejected God and he lost out on a piece of that blessing that came with the calling. Now God was prepared for it, because you can see that he had already sent Aaron. He knew what Moses was going to do. But can you imagine if Moses had just stepped up right away? This is what happens when fear controls us. When we don't respond properly to fear, we get to the point where we outright can reject God because it consumes us. God has asked you to do something, and you say no. "God, I'm not going to do that. I am too afraid." But we all got tons of excuses why we can't. We're not worthy enough, good enough, can't do it, don't know how. And we forget that it's not about us, it's about God. Fear forces you to look at yourself. And it paralyzes you in the spot. And all you can see is who you are. And you don't even see the good parts, you only see what is wrong. And fear paralyzes you. Later on in the story, Moses does step up. And he goes out and he delivers the Israelites. And he becomes one of the greatest leaders the Israelites had. And now he's in the Faith Hall of Fame. Because he stepped out and had faith from this point on. And he was empowered. And that's what faith does. It empowers us. Fear will paralyze you, while having faith will empower you. When you begin to act on that faith, God is there to walk beside you and catch you. See, if you jump on your own will, yeah, chances are you're going to break a leg. But if you jump on God's, He'll catch you. One of my greatest fears is you. It's all of you. Again, don't be offended. It's not your fault. I know I don't know you. But let me clarify. There are some here that actually know me from when I was a kid and can attest to this. I was a weird kid. I had a learning disability, so I didn't always talk, right? I was just like kind of here, there, and everywhere. I was very distracted. I was very impulsive. I hopped around a lot, literally like a frog. I'm not going to demonstrate that. I will not have that image burned into more of your brains. But it was weird. I didn't really get social cues. On top of it, I was homeschooled. Apologies to anyone that was homeschooled. But you don't get that normal social interaction as much as others. And, you know, communicate always the best. But because of that weirdness and who I was, as I got a little bit older, I went back into school. And when I got to that point, I was picked on pretty heavily. And I couldn't figure out why, you know. It went on for a few years, and I was just like, what's wrong with me? And then on top of it, through this time, my mom died, and it caused all these emotions I had no idea how to deal with. And so I went from being weird to being a problem and angry and not understanding and didn't want to hang out with people, and yet I did. It was a weird time in my life. And I remember I was on the playground this one time. It was probably in like grade 5. And I just got into a fight with one of these kids because they were making fun of me, and I had enough and I snapped, and he was way older than me, so I hit him, but it didn't do anything. I was just like, ah. Look dumb. And then they made fun of me for that, which is just way worse. But I remember the bell rang. Everyone went inside except for me, and I just hung out on the playground. And I remember I just started talking to myself, but I also started talking to God a little bit. I was like, what's wrong with me? People don't like me. In fact, people hate me. What's wrong with me? And I remember I just kept asking it, and I had tears coming to my eyes, and I was just so angry and sad, and I said, that's it. I'm not doing this again. I'm not going through this pain again. So I made a decision. I said, I'm going to stop talking to people. And for the next while, I'm going to watch them, and I'm going to learn how they act, and I'm just going to act how they want me to act, because I don't want to do this again. And I came to the conclusion that I couldn't be me, that I had to change who I was in order to be accepted. And I came so hard on myself, and I never let that side of me show again, that hyperactive, impulsive kid. I would hold him back every day. I said, no, it's weird. Don't do it. Maybe so, but it's who I was, and it caused a lot of problems in my life. It caused me to really hate God for a long time, and then hate people because they never accepted me, and I never got to be myself, and no one I met knew who I was, and I missed out on a lot because I allowed that pain to control a majority of my future decisions. And any time people would get close to me and I started having to be vulnerable with people and they would know who I was and what I'd been through and the things that I thought, I would stop. I'd run away. I'd make up another mask. I'd put it on. Act like I didn't care. And I kept people at a distance at all times. Thankfully, I'm not like that anymore. But because of that, when God came to me, when I started asking God, being, what do you have for me in my life? And he said, I want you to be a pastor. I'm like, God, you want me to get on a stage, preach, talk to people, love them, be vulnerable, experience life? Said, yes. I did the exact same thing Moses did. I said, God, do you know me? I can't talk right. I don't write well. God, I can't do all these things. And God's answer was, I will be with you. I went through every portion of the list. This is why I love the story so much. It's because I've been where Moses is. And I know you guys have at some point in your time as well. God has asked you to do something that terrifies you. And if he hasn't, he will. And at that point, you're going to have to choose whether to allow your fear to paralyze you or to be empowered by your faith. If I could get the worship team and the prayer team up. I don't know what it is that God has been asking you to do. I don't know your past. I don't know how equipped you are. That's mine. I'm so sorry. But what I do know is that when you step up and you act out your faith, you will be empowered by his grace. I know that because when I stand on the stage, I shake. And it takes me the first part of my sermon to really hit stride and go. But I know when I start going that it's not me anymore. That I'm just able to speak and hear God and deliver that sermon and talk to people and be vulnerable without that fear of experiencing that past pain. Because I know God's on the other side waiting to catch me. So if you have a fear of failure, rejection, or of just experiencing being vulnerable and experiencing pain that you've had in your past, during this closing song, I just want us to come up and receive prayer for that. I want you to make the decision today to not be controlled by your past pain. To not allow something that's already behind you to control and decide what's ahead of you. And I want you to do so through faith. And coming up and receiving prayer or finding someone that can pray for you is a first step to acting that faith out.